Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Do the Right Thing Right with your host, Phyllis Wilson, the Do Right Guru. We may not have all the answers, but we'll help you find them. We're coming to you live from Houston, Texas, as we do every Thursday at 12 noon Central Standard Time. Our format is 30 minutes to allow for a short lessons learned application regarding ethics. For call-ins, dial 646-478-3840 or interact in our chat room.
Hello and welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Do the Right Thing Right for Thursday, January the 22nd. And we're moving right along in January. It's going to be over before you know it. But listen, I'm coming to you live from Houston, Texas. And as our announcer said, for call-ins, dial 646-478-3840, or you can interact in our chat room. And I'm excited about our show today. Today's guest is Kevin Benton. And Kevin, thank you for being on the show today.
Yeah, thank you for having me, and I'm looking forward to it.
Wonderful. Kevin, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Well, my background centers on family, church, education, and basketball. And I attended Massmom High School, where I led 3 years in varsity basketball. And as a senior, I earned the Player of the Year Sportsmanship Award. I earned a full athletic scholarship to play Division I basketball at the University of Delaware, and I was fortunate and blessed to participate in the NCAA tournament back-to-back years, which was a lot of fun, and, you know, all the kind of the March Madness mayhem that kind of goes on every year. So since the call of God on my life, I left my scholarship situation to transfer to Liberty University, and that's where I earned my degree in psychology. And for those that don't know, Liberty is the world's largest evangelical Christian school, founded by the late, great Chancellor, Reverend Dr. Jerry Falwell. And so while I was at Liberty, I actually tried out for the team and walked on. I made it, and I was blessed to go back to the NCAA tournament and play against another one of my other friends, he now former NBA champion, Rasheed Wallace. He was playing for the North Carolina Tar Heels at that time. And so after... After Liberty, I was blessed to play pro basketball in Europe and Asia and a host of other countries. And I was also invited to some pro summer camps, including the Philadelphia 76ers summer camp. I got the opportunity to play against NBA legend Kobe Bryant, a host of other great NBA players and overseas players. And after basketball, I found myself serving as a youth pastor at a mega church, doing full-time ministry, and now I'm currently a best-selling author of a Christian fiction book called A Field Trip to Hell, Experience the 30 Torments of Hell Firsthand Without Having to Stay for Eternity.
Wow. Now, tell us a little bit about that book. Your title is very interesting, A Field Trip to Hell?
Yes. Well, actually, when I first started writing the book, my target, my goal was to really encourage people in connection to their inherited pain and consequential pain. And I know that has absolutely nothing to do with hell, but all of us have had things happen to our lives that was not our fault. That's what I call inherited pain. It wasn't your fault. You didn't ask for it. You didn't pray for it. It was somebody else's bad decision that fell on you. But it tends to be associated with anger, blame, and the tendency to be self-righteous because it wasn't your fault. Mm-hmm. And then we have this consequential pain where, you know, because we're not perfect, we make mistakes and we make bad choices. Mm-hmm. And that type of pain tends to be connected with guilt, shame, and regret. So I kind of was chronicling my story, my journey of my good decisions and bad decisions and how God was able to take both and take a mess and make a miracle. And so I chronicled the sufferings and pains that I had gone through, including a near-death experience where I had contracted a rare heart disease called hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, and I was given one day to live. And I miraculously made it through that trial. And my story continues to end in triumph. And so I wanted to encourage people, you know, with their trials, troubles, and tribulations, or what we symbolically say, I've gone through hell in life. And then I make a transition into doctrine and theology about the afterlife place called hell. And it is non-threatening, non-judgmental, non-condemning, but I actually just depict, I take my readers on an actual tour from a doctrinal, theological, and biblical perspective of the 30 revealed torments of hell. And it's just my story is actually encouraging, inspiring, and the part about hell is very, very informative. So I thought it was very interesting.
Wow. It sounds interesting, Kevin. Oh, my. Now, where can a person get this book at?
They can go to Amazon.com, and I have it on two editions. I got the paperback edition for those that are of the traditional book readers, and then for those that are in the electronic age, you can get it on the Kindle edition or download on the Kindle edition as well. So I'm very proud of it. Made the bestseller list. And like I said, I never thought I would be an author, let alone a best-selling author. My goal was to make it to the NBA, so that was about it.
Well, for our audience, the book is called A Field Trip to Hell, Experience the 30 Torments of Hell Firsthand Without Having to Stay for Eternity.
Yep, and you get to make it back. With this one, you get to make it back. So.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, listen, Kevin, we had you on the show to talk about an ethical dilemma that you faced at work. Have you ever faced one?
Absolutely. Actually, I face ethical dilemmas every day, and I think that more so stems from the culture in my particular workplace, and it is a culture that doesn't always represent integrity. So I'm faced with choices such as, you get faced with the dilemma of falsifying documents. Are you going to take an extra lunch break? You know, are you going to get caught up in the gossip and the he say, she say? You know, it's these various different things that go on within the scope of the culture. And I've just decided that I'm going to be true to my faith, true to my family, true to myself. And I'm not going to be defined by anyone or that culture. And I have high self-efficacy. I want to do the right thing. I want to have integrity. I want my virtues to shine through my life more than my vices. And so you have to, you know, really be self-motivated, because in an age where integrity is not the most popular thing, you know, you really have to have something on the inside to motivate you to want to have integrity when most people around you aren't. So.
So tell me, why do you think there's so many things going on at work where people have a lack of integrity? What do you think it's caused from?
Well, I think it stems from what the culture promotes. And so if the culture promotes lying, cheating, and stealing, and falsifying documents, there's this actual peer pressure to have to conform. And when you make a decision not to conform, you get targeted. You know, you can be harassed. Of course, you're going to be talked about. You're going to be made fun of. You're going to be isolated in a lot of cases, where you may find yourself eating lunch by yourself on your lunch break. So, you know, you really do have to purpose in your heart not to be defiled and not to be defined. And so that's what I've decided to do. I really don't care about people, that anybody that would try to push me in the wrong direction. Because I have too many people in my life that are encouraging, that are inspirational, that that provide positive accountability and so forth and so on. And so to go into this environment is kind of easy from the standpoint that I can just treat it like military. This is just my job. And these people around me that aren't exemplifying integrity, well, those aren't people who I would really want in my inner circle anyway. You know what I mean?
So what about your supervisor? Are they in that same category of being deceitful and 'cause
I have a good supervisor. I can say that I have a good supervisor, but the thing that we have to always realize in a culture where lack of integrity is kind of promoted or endorsed, there's always the temptation for someone to compromise, for even if in their mind, to stay in good graces with their supervisor or to keep their job. You understand what I'm saying? And that's where it gets a little tougher, because, you know, people have to feed their families and, you know, you want to keep your job, and if my supervisor, you know, instruct them to do something, you know, now they're in an ethical, you know, dilemma themselves,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
what choice they make falls on me. You know what I'm saying? And
right.
So it's one of those things that you really, I can say it takes a lot of courage. I mean,
and
the people on my job, they look at me like I'm kind of weird. And I've even heard people use the term crazy. And I don't have a problem with it. I really don't have a problem with it when I know I'm doing the right thing. But what I find mm-hmm. so sad is that the people on my job get a visual depiction of integrity. And that visual depiction in terms of me making sure I come to work on time, I leave when I'm supposed to leave, I take my break for the length of time that I'm supposed to take my break for and not a second over. You know, mm-hmm. your depiction of integrity you view as being crazy or something's
mm-hmm.
wrong with it. That's called
mm-hmm.
a perversion. You know, it's
mm-hmm.
called a perversion. And that's the day and age that we live in where
mm-hmm.
we can look at what's right and twist it. Because if everybody's doing the wrong thing and you have this one guy, coming by and making everybody feel uncomfortable, it's like he's the crazy one then. I said, well, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, does your organization have a code of conduct or rules in place?
Yes. I mean, and that's the ironic thing. I mean, they have code of conduct. They have policies in place. But one of the things that I have seen during my tenure there is there's a lack of accountability. And so
mm-hmm.
when you have a place where there's a lack of accountability, you'll find chaos in terms of people doing
mm-hmm.
what they choose, and
mm-hmm.
then the people who they are holding accountable are the people who are holding themselves accountable. I hold myself accountable because I have high expectations from myself,
mm-hmm.
And I was blessed to, you know, grow up in a good home where I had a mother and father, you know, who taught me, my brother and my sister, good morals, good values about integrity.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I got older, I grabbed a hold of it for myself, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so...
Mm-hmm.
Having high expectations for myself. I hold myself accountable. And then I have
mm-hmm.
high self-efficacy. I want to have
mm-hmm.
integrity. It means something
mm-hmm.
to me to want to do the right thing, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, I've had other guests on the show, and when they're faced with ethical dilemmas, some of them have left their jobs. Have you
mm-hmm.
ever considered that?
My philosophy is this. When God says that it's time for me to leave, I won't stay a day later. And at this time, I just don't feel like he's telling me to leave. I don't feel led to leave at this time. You know, one of the things I've learned, you know, from a faith standpoint is that God will rather remove the situation or give you the strength to go through it. And what I see is that he's giving me the strength to go through it. And even though it's caused me pain and frustration, you know, I find myself reminding myself, I'm needed here. I'm needed
mm-hmm.
here because how would they see the opposite if I wasn't here? So
mm-hmm.
I'm able to, I told God this. I said, you know, if I retreat, what a bad reputation that would be for Christianity. And I told
mm-hmm.
God that, even if it causes me pain, just, as long as you protect me, I'll stay, you know what I mean? I'll stay right where I'm at. But I'm going to put
mm-hmm.
Christianity on my back in spite of the pain, in spite of the frustration, and I'm going to stand in the midst of this. And that's what I've decided to do. And, you know, I've been like this since I was younger, you know what I mean? So I didn't just
mm-hmm.
start being this way because my philosophy when I was in high school was I've never heard people who do wrong apologize for being wrongdoers. I've never heard that in my life. I've never heard anybody
mm-hmm.
come to me and say, you know, man, I want to just apologize to you for being a liar and a thief
mm-hmm.
and all that stuff. So
mm-hmm.
I adopted at a young age that if wrongdoers don't have to apologize for doing the wrong thing, I'm not apologizing for doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I have righteous anger with that, too. So that's kind of, you know... Yeah, I have a little righteous indignation with that, you know what I mean?
Well, you make a good point there about them apologizing for wrongdoing. That will never happen. No,
right.
It won't. So how long have you been with the company that you're with?
This particular company I've been with for 6 years. Yes.
Wow.
I've been with it for six years. They've been trying to get rid of me for 6 years, but they can't. They're going to have to be blinded by the light, so, you know, until it's my time to go. So.
Oh, wow. So that means you are very strong in your faith. I mean, 6 years? Come on, Kevin. That's a long time.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
And I'm going to be honest. It's easy for me to make the decision to do the right thing, but it is difficult because sometimes, you know, you're treading a lonely ground. You know, you're by yourself, and you're in an environment where people aren't trustworthy, and you know what I mean? And I mean, because all of us were created for fellowship and for connection. And I am grateful for the people of integrity I have outside my job. So that actually gives me a lot of balance. I have a lot of people who I can connect with. Well, not a lot, but a few good people who I can connect with that gives me balance. But so it's difficult. It really is. It is difficult. But you really have to have a made up mind, and you got the purpose in your heart. And like I said, it just goes back to my philosophy when I was in high school. I'm never going to apologize for doing the right thing, and because I've never heard wrongdoers apologize for being wrongdoers. So I have this self efficacy. I got high standards, but then I got like this righteous indignation that kind of fuels me as well. You know what I mean? Kind of gives me that inner drive, you know.
Well,
and then also I have goals. You know, I want to have goals in terms of getting vested so I can, you know, work towards retirement and things. So you know, you have family, and those are other motivations that kind of tie in as well. So yes.
Wow. So Kevin, are you a lone ranger at work? I mean, are there other people who honor their integrity as well? I mean, do you find that at your organization?
Well, so far I'm the lone ranger. So far, it kind of seems like when one wrongdoer goes, another one replaces. That's kind of what it seems like so far. But, you know, I am kind of the lone ranger, and it goes back to the culture. The culture is so strong. The peer pressure to conform is so strong that if you don't, you're going to pay a social price. You're going to pay a social price. And I just decided to count the cost. You know, I mean, you have people that want to control you. They want you to think like them so that they want you to do something wrong for them towards somebody else, you know what I mean? You can just fall in line. I refuse to do that. I'm not going to lie on nobody. I'm not trying to get nobody written up or fired. I'm not going to let nobody define me. And so when you decide to do the right thing, in fact, I was even accused of, I think I'm better, you know, for like things like getting to work on time. Well, I thought we all were supposed to be getting to work on time so we can keep our jobs, you know what I mean? And so I got accused of thinking that I'm better, but it's just that I have high standards. I don't feel like I have to tolerate a deceitful relationship. I don't need it. What benefit and connection to love and building up and pushing me towards my destiny, why do I need that relationship? Why do I need a connection with somebody who's harassing me? You know what I mean? Things like that. I don't need it. You know what I mean?
Wow. So, I mean, when the organization has the Christmas party and things like that, do you participate in that company picnic and all that?
No. During my social time, I want to be as far away from that place and those people as I can. In fact, when it's time to get off work, I can't get out of there fast enough, I'm telling you. But what helps me is just to treat it like military. I'm going in and do my 8 hours. And then I'm going to the next phase of my life that I look forward to. But, no, I don't go to the Christmas party. And it doesn't mean that everybody that goes to the Christmas party is a bad person. Because there are some good people that go there. But there are some things that take place at the Christmas party that I heard that isn't in line with integrity. Because, you know, people get liquor in their system, you know what I mean? They start acting like, you know, they don't know how to behave themselves, so.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this, because we talked about integrity and ethics, and they're kind of interchangeable. But
yes.
Do you think there's a difference between ethics and morals?
Or are they
one and the same?
I think they're different, but they're connected. I think that your morals and values would be exercised, or should I say the opportunity for your morals and values to be exercised in an ethical situation. So they're slightly different, but they're intertwined because it's the ethical situation that really puts your morals and your values to the test. And so at that point, you know, your will is in the middle in terms of what decision that you're going to make. And so I would guess we say they're definitely connected.
You know, they say that the ethical culture of an organization goes from the top down.
Yeah.
And somewhere along the way, tell me if you agree with me, somewhere along the way when it's coming down, it changes.
When you say, okay, does it change for the better or for the worse?
For the worse.
Okay.
Right.
I would agree with you, 125%. Yes, absolutely.
Why do you think that is?
Well, it's the power of leadership. You know what I mean? That's why we have to be careful what leadership we sit under. We have to be careful what leadership we allow to speak into our lives. We have to be careful what leadership we allow to give us guidance, because a person's leadership can only take you as far as their own morals, values, and ethics, and we're only going to reinforce and endorse what we would think, feel, and do. So if I don't see nothing wrong with taking an extra 15-minute break, I'm not going to, you know, come down on you, especially if I like you or you're my friend, or, you know, I'm not going to come down you about it.
But the person that's trying to do right, they'll come down
on that person. Yes.
Okay. But, Kevin, everybody does it. Don't you hear people saying that? Everybody does it. Everybody takes a long lunch. Everybody does that. You know,
right.
So what's wrong with being a part of the crowd, doing what everybody else does?
Right. And that, it goes back to that's their cultural influence. And the minute you say, but I'm not doing that, then that's when you're now going to be pretty much a victim of, you're going to pay a social price. Because what happens is the minute you do the opposite of what the crowd's doing, now you're sending a message to them, y'all need to bring it up higher. And people don't want to bring it up higher. They want to stay below the bar in their thinking and their feelings and in their behavior. And so it's comfortable to take the extra 15 minutes and, hey, man, we just going to put on our documentation that we did it. We did it, and everybody lives happily ever after. But the minute you get up and walk away from the lunch table, now you think you're better. Now they're going up to the upstairs to the supervisor and lying on you and things like that. But it's sometimes, you know, it's an old saying that sometimes your presence is best represented by not being there. And sometimes what we will not say and what we won't do sends a strong message. And then the things that we do say and that we do that are in line with integrity and having morals and values sends an even stronger message, you know?
I agree.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you something. You've mentioned it a couple of times. Have you ever served in the military?
No.
No?
Okay. No, I served under a pastor who served in the military. So that might be kind of where I get that slight hint of military, you know. he had a military background, and we kind of gleaned from that. So that might have been where I got it from.
Because I know that a lot of people in the military are and I'm not gonna. I don't use this in a negative connotation, but are kind of indoctrined to do the right thing, and you know, And I used to be in the military for 7 years, and they you got to do the right thing because other people are counting on you, especially like in a time of war. You can't have nobody slacking or, you know, not carrying their load. So, and you couldn't come back 15 minutes for a lunch break. You wouldn't have a job pretty much. You know,
absolutely.
You'd have disciplinary action against you. So, but I think it's interesting how a person can. You should be commended because I think it's highly honorable that a person can stand up at work, where the place where you earn your living, where you get the money to buy your food and put a roof over your head, but you can stay there and withstand the ridicule for being different.
Yeah, it's you know, I got, like I said, I had my mind made up, I got my heart fixed, and you know, it is challenging. It really is challenging, but I think, along with the other things that I've said, the thing that really helps me is that this is just my job. I'm just here for 8 hours. And then what helps as well, I work 12 midnight to 8. So all the stuff I'm talking about, I go through from 7 to 8 o'clock for 1 hour, but it's an hour of hell, man, I'm telling you.
Oh, wow. Well,
sometimes some things go on my shift because some of the people who work on my shift are connected with some of the people who come in at 7 o'clock. You know.
I think that working the night shift is great because you have the whole day off and you can do a lot of things that you can't do at night. So I also commend you on that because it's not easy working night shift. But if it keeps you out of a lot of that commotion going on during the daytime, then hey. Now, have you always worked at night?
No, just at this particular job where I am. And I actually like it because I work by myself, and so you know, I kind of actually like that. You know what I mean?
So, because I was wondering if you got transferred there or, you know, from another department in the company, but no.
Actually, I did. Okay. I was at another department. And transferred down. Same department, just a different branch. And so I did. So it was better. It was more peaceful. It was less stress until I ran into to the wrong doors. I'm just trying to make light of it. I mean, it really is a challenging situation, but I'm just making light of it. I'm so grateful for the opportunity to hopefully inspire somebody that you can stand up. You know, you can be strong. You don't have to let people at work define you. And, you know, you can do it and you will make it. You know what I mean? And I just thank you, you know, once again, for having a show that's encouraging the world that, you know, there are some people out here that still have integrity as a priority in their character and in their personal lives because it's just so needed. It's just so needed in this day and age, you know.
Yeah, I agree. And I want to thank you, Kevin, for joining us today. It's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure talking with you, and it's been very refreshing to know that you can stand and you can do the right thing. So,
yes.
I also want to thank our audience for tuning in today. Next week's show, we'll have another guest who'll talk about an ethical dilemma that he or she faced. So I invite my listeners to tune in next Thursday at 12 noon Central Standard Time. And remember, I'm your host, Phyllis Wilson, the Do Right Guru. I may not have all the answers, but I'll help you find them.